construction podcast for kids, grown-ups, and whoever wants to listen.
Hello, and welcome to The Scoop. I'm your host, Ellis, and I'm really excited to share this episode about transportation with you. Because I was lucky enough to interview the Massachusetts Secretary of Transportation, Monica Tibbetts-Nutt, and the State Highway Administrator, Jonathan Gulliver. I originally reached out to them because I wanted to learn about how the state manages snow removal on the highways, but we ended up talking lots about fascinating transportation topics. In this episode, you'll hear about snow plows, but you'll also hear about repairing bridges, dealing with car crashes on the highway, ordering new train cars, how climate change is altering the way MassDOT, as we call it here in Massachusetts, needs to manage the highways, and snow plow names. It was a cold and windy day when I visited the Highway Operations Center in Boston.
How's it going? You Ellis?
Yeah.
How you doing, Jonathan? How are you?
Thank you.
This is our Highway Administrator and this is the Secretary.
Hi, I'm Monica.
Before we get into the nitty-gritty details about transportation, I asked Secretary Monica Tibbetts-Nutt to share some information about her job and her path.
What got you into transportation and how did that lead you to become the Secretary of Transportation?
I really liked building cities when I was a kid. Played a lot with Legos, a lot with SimCity. And so when I went to graduate school, I went to architecture school to learn how to build cities. And then I got obsessed with trains and subways. And so I moved out here and started working for the MBTA. And trains are awesome. So if you can imagine building a train set and then getting to do that in real life, it's a ton of fun. And I've just stayed in transportation this entire time, and eventually they made me transportation secretary. So now I get to oversee all the different ways you can move, whether it's transit, highways, airplanes, everything.
That sounds like a very big job.
I decide either whether we go ahead and do a project, change the project, and usually how in the world we're going to pay for the project.
What's a project that you have needed to change and how did you change it?
I change a lot of projects. I would say, for example, we're buying a bunch of Orange Line and Red Line trains, several hundred of them, almost 500. But the problem is it's taken a really long time. The factory they're trying to build is very, very behind. And so my job is to figure out whether we want to keep building those trains at that factory or move it to a different factory. So those are the kinds of decisions I have to make. Design changes I don't do very often because I have really good people I work with, so I don't have to change those too often.
Yeah, it's nice having good people to work with.
It's the only way I can do my job.
One of those good people is the Highway Administrator, Jonathan Gulliver, who is trained as an engineer and now oversees roads, bridges, and tunnels. They work together on all sorts of projects.
Or the governor, whenever she wants a bridge, for example, if she wants a bridge fixed, she calls me so then I can work with Jonathan to figure out the engineering, and then I have to usually figure out how to pay for it. So a lot of my day is about 14 hours of meetings.
That is a lot of meetings.
It is. I don't get to get out of the office too often. I really like Jonathan's job, so he gets me out of the office a lot and lets me play with stuff.
Sounds like something I would do.
Oh, absolutely. It is a ton of fun.
Working on bridges does sound pretty fun and interesting, so I asked Jonathan more about that.
We build and fix a lot of bridges. We have the oldest bridge inventory in the United States, so that's something to think about.
If that was an award, that would be the weirdest award I've ever heard of.
It would be, but think about it this way. We're an old state. And a lot of our bridges, one of the reasons why we have old bridges is because we have a lot of historic bridges. So there's a lot of really cool bridges. You've probably seen all the ones up and down the Charles River. Those are all really cool bridges. Here's a quick fact for you. They were all drawbridges at one time, every single one of them. And the last bridge to be put in that wasn't, or the first bridge to be put in that was not a drawbridge was the Longfellow Bridge.
The Longfellow Bridge connects Boston and Cambridge. It's a very cool bridge with a great view of both cities. And I hear it has a great view of fireworks on July 4th. It also has an unusual nickname, the Salt and Pepper Bridge.
But if you look at the Longfellow Bridge, it looks like a drawbridge. And the reason is it was under design when they changed the rules. And they said, you know what, we'll allow fixed span bridges now. And up until that point, they had already started designing the draw towers, which is what machinery
salt
is.
And pepper.
Yep, that's the salt and pepper shakers. So they pivoted through design, but they decided, you know what, we're going to keep these because
they're decoration.
Yep, they're decorative now. They look cool, but that was the first bridge.
And now it's
allow.
Earned a new nickname, Salt and Pepper Shaker Bridge.
Yep.
So how do you fix a bridge?
How do you fix a bridge?
Yes.
Well, it's a lot of work. Every bridge is different. The main thing that we look for, our goal is to make it so it's safe, right? So our first job when we look at a bridge is make it safe to carry the kind of traffic it needs to carry. So we were talking about the Salt and Pepper Shaker Bridge, right?
Yeah.
We did a huge job on that a few years ago and really upgraded it. And that bridge is a really important one. It carries, not only does it carry bikes and pedestrians and cars, it also carries the red line. So it carries the MBTA on it too. So that's one of the reasons why that bridge is so hefty looking. It's a really big, heavy bridge because it carries so much weight. And what we had to do with that bridge and what we do with a lot of ours is that we go in there and we look at where are the pieces old that need to be replaced.
So how do you get down there? Would you take a boat under?
Yep, take a boat underneath it. We also have a really, really cool truck called an Inspector Fit. Actually, we're up to an Inspector 60 now. It looks like a fire truck, but instead of having ladders on it, it has this really long, big articulating arm, and it allows our inspectors to get up in it and get up and over and underneath the bridge. They're really cool. They're really cool pieces of equipment.
I have to look that up. That is amazing.
Yep.
Jonathan's job is not all cool trucks and bridge projects. He also has to deal with some stuff that's not so fun.
What are some of the most common things you have to deal with on the highways?
Crashes, unfortunately. They happen every day, but a lot of it comes down to driver distraction, people fooling around with their cell phones, and that sort of stuff, and causes a lot of crashes. So I'd say that's the most frequent thing that we have to deal with, and that's one of the big things these guys in the next room over do for us in the Highway Operations Center is they monitor for those crashes.
I actually got to see the Operations Center control room that Jonathan was telling me about.
Oh my God, that is crazy. This is a lot of screens. A lot of very big screens.
So when I walked into that room, what I saw was a bunch of live video from a bunch of the highways with a bunch of desks behind it.
These guys are here all the time, and they monitor everything that comes in.
You can pull up any camera. You can see any roadway.
Oh, that's crazy. So where are all these cameras mounted? You really never see them.
So, see that pole that's going straight up and down?
Yep.
On the left-hand corner? That's a camera mount. So you'll see when you're driving up and down the highway, you probably won't notice them. They just blend in with the landscape, but there's a bunch of them all over the place.
So with all those cameras all over the state, how do people know which ones to look at?
Do they change just automatically, or do they have to be changed?
No, they do both. So they use AI to look at what's going on with traffic. If traffic slows down or stops, it can flag it to these guys that there's a problem, and then they can start looking into it a little bit more. And we'll have like a map up like this so they can see if there's a trouble spot that shows up all of a sudden that they can again track it down and see if there's a problem.
How do you deal with just a normal car crash? Two cars collide.
Mm-hmm. Two cars collide, and if there's no serious injuries, we work with state police and tow operators to clear them as quickly as we can off the highway to open it back up to traffic again. If it's a severe crash and you have to bring in an ambulance and a fire truck or whatever, first responders, and they'll work with whoever's there on the ground to make sure that they have what they need and that they're directing people to them that they need to get there. We will shut down lanes of the highway we activate message boards for miles in advance of that crash. And the idea behind that is to get any traffic that might be approaching that crash to start diverting elsewhere.
The people in control room also monitor tunnels.
If you look at, see the centerpiece here?
Yeah.
With the maps and all that, all those switches and stuff? Mm-hmm. That's the central artery tunnel.
You probably know about the central artery tunnel, even if you don't know it by its name. It's the tunnel that was created by the Big Dig Project, the biggest, most complex highway construction project ever in the U.S. It replaced an elevated highway that was dividing the neighborhoods of Boston. Now that the highway's underground, the MassDOT has cameras and tools to monitor it and identify potential problems.
And that's all the life safety systems in it. So those are all the fans and the fire protection systems and all that stuff are all coming to this building and are managed by these guys here.
In other words, this building and the people who work in it 24 hours a day are very important. Fortunately, there's a backup system in case something goes wrong here.
So we have another smaller version of this out in Whistler. So if anything happens to this, if there's a flood or loses power or whatever it might be, these guys can all relocate to our Whistler office so that we never lose operations.
The Highway Operations Center has a special area dedicated to the thing that brought me here in the first place. Snow!
This is actually our snow and ice desk. So when we operate for, when we activate our storm desk for any kind of storm, whether it's like a rain event or snow, they'll have somebody sitting there, and they work with all of our district offices throughout the state to make sure that they have resources where they need them and when they need them. All of our trucks have GPS units on them, so we can see where those trucks are at any given time, what kind of route, what kind of timing they have on their routes. And we also have, we use a lot of instrumentation on the roadways. Again, a lot of people don't see them, but we use these things called roadside weather information systems. And those are a big technology package on the edge of the roadway. And it measures what the road friction is, so we know if it's getting icy. It measures the road temperature, so we know if it could get icy. Gives you real-time weather in that specific area, so it gives you a lot of information.
Not only did I get to hear a lot about plows, I also got to see one.
You want to climb up in it?
Sure, why not?
So,
it's a bit tall.
It is.
Definitely a viewpoint from up here.
Yeah, these are big.
I had no idea that this plow would be this big. It was absolutely ginormous, but it was also so high. Despite the size from the outside, it wasn't very spacious on the inside. There were a ton of controls, some pretty easy to understand and some, like, not easy to understand. There was just a whole dashboard of switches and buttons and stuff like that. And there was just one control beside the driver's seat that, in big letters on the top, it said plow controls, and then it had a little joystick that you could move it up, down, left, right.
You want to hit the air horn? Everybody loves the air horn.
Oh, right here.
Yeah, there it is.
Woo! That's loud!
When I walked around to the back of the plow, I saw the mud flaps. They were almost as tall as me! I also saw a conveyor belt with which the salt comes out of.
These are what we call sander bodies. Load this up with salt, and it can deploy salt at the same time that it's going down the highway.
If you want to make a mental picture in your mind, it's like a dump truck, but in the middle, on the bottom, in the middle, there's a big conveyor belt. And when the salt goes onto the conveyor belt, it dumps it out the back, and there's a spinning wheel at the back that goes very, very fast, and it spews the salt and sand all over the highway. I had a lot of questions about how they take care of snow and ice on highways.
I know that there's like the V-shaped plows and the straight plows. What's the deal with those and why you use different ones?
So we use only the shaped ones in Massachusetts for our fleet. Those V-shaped ones, you can see them in a couple of different areas, but what those tend to do is they can put snow on both sides, where these shaped ones can only go to one side. And we can direct it a little bit, but the idea is that we like to run on our highways, we run about three plows at one time in a battery, we call it.
Uh-huh.
And the idea is that each plow moves some snow over to the edge until it gets off the roadway. V-shaped ones they use in places like Canada, some places in New Hampshire and Maine, where they have the smaller roads where they can just push them off to both sides at the same time. We also use one, it's not here, but it's got your haulage. It's a tow plow. Tow plows will handle two and a half lanes at the same time. The thing that goes behind it, and that swings out too, it's like a whole extra plow.
Why would you not use the ones that attach to the back? Are they expensive? Or
they're expensive, and you can't. They don't maneuver as well, so they're really good for an interstate where it's like a long, big state straight highway. But it's not good for like some of the smaller roadways.
So there's these plows, and then there are like the smaller like pickup truck plows. Are the pickup truck plows driven by people at the Department of Transportation, or are those just contractors?
Both. So we use both. So this is a MassDOT plow that we have here, but we also use a lot of contractors. Mm-hmm. The smaller ones you're talking about, we will use those for places like a rest area,
uh-huh.
like those park and rides where the smaller plows are more maneuverable.
In what case would you send the plows out? You wouldn't send the plows out right as it started snowing, or there wouldn't be any snow to plow. So when do you send the plows out?
So we actually send, when we have a snow and ice event, let's say a big storm's coming, we actually send our trucks out way in advance, like almost a day in advance sometimes, and they'll spray the roadway with a salt brine. That's pre-treatment. And the idea behind that is that it keeps the road dry when the snow starts falling for a little bit of it. So it gives us a buffer, because you can't predict exactly when it's going to start snowing. But when it starts snowing, you want to make sure the plows are ready. When you put that brine down, it gives us an extra hour or so before we have to get our plows out there. So it gives us that buffer that we need. But we'll start bringing our plows in when it is snowing, so that we can start treating the roadway right away, because we don't want to let it get slippery as much as we can. But when a big storm happens, it's going to get slippery, and that's when we start getting plows, putting their blades down too, as well as just salt.
If you've listened to the first episode of The Scoop, you know that salt raises the freezing point of water. So when you put salt down on the road, it takes longer to freeze. And that extra time before roads freeze help the plows get ready. Of course, the plows don't get ready themselves. They have to load the plows up with salt sheds.
How much salt and sand do you order, and how do you know how much to order?
So we have, off the top of my head, I think we have 56 depots across the state, and each one of them has various salt sheds attached to them. And those salt sheds, depending on the size, will hold, on the smaller salt sheds, they hold about 20 tons, and on the bigger ones, they go up to a couple hundred tons. We call those super sheds. And we try to keep, every year at the beginning of the season, we fill them up. We just get them as full as they can get. And we have contracts with salt suppliers. They're actually mostly in East Boston and Chelsea is where the majority of them come from. They bring them in by barge. And throughout the year, depending on how much we use, we have a contract with them. We'll send trucks out, pick some more up, and bring them back in, keep those salt sheds full. But the plan is that we always want to have enough to deal with whatever we get. And we generally have more on hand than we think we'll need, because you never know when you're going to have another year like a 2015 where it just keeps on snowing and snowing and snowing and snowing, and you can't get salt fast enough. So we keep a lot on hand.
I was one when that happened, so I don't
so
really
remember.
Remember that.
I remember that.
Yeah. Well, my mom definitely does.
But to decide that, we track the weather.
A lot.
So we have a meteorologist for the state, and usually when the weather starts to get ugly, we get alerts. Then the governor gets all of us together. So you'll have the highway administrator, we'll have the head of MEMA, our emergency management, we will have the state police, everyone that has to deal with the weather, and then we sit down and figure out how much snow and ice we're going to get. And then Jonathan, unfortunately, is the one that has to go out and try and make sure we're ready to clean it all up.
This is kind of a technical question. How do you fill the plows up?
If you've ever seen a truck full of salt, and I bet you have, you might have wondered, how do they get the salt in there? Is it the same as when they fill a truck with dirt? Sort of.
We have a salt shed, and it has like a ramp that comes down underneath it. We're to the side of it. And the truck will pull up next to it, and these are in our bigger sheds. And then we have a loader up on top, and they will push the salt and dump it into the back of the truck. So that's the better of the type of ways we do it. But we use a loader. I'm sure you know what a front-end loader is, right?
Of course I do.
Yeah. So all
the podcast is called The Scoop. What do you think?
You have to, right. So all of our salt sheds have loaders at them. And those are what actually load the back of the truck. But on the better ones, that's where we have the ramp, and so it's a lot easier and faster to fill them up.
Did you know that some snowplows have names? And you know who gets to name them? Kids! Elementary and middle schools can submit a name to the contest each November. This year, MassDOT got 1,000 entries from schools across Massachusetts. They picked two winners from each of the state's six highway divisions. I asked the secretary and the highway administrator what their favorites are.
Snohemian Rhapsody,
I don't know if we're allowed to say.
Oh, I 100% will say that. I think Snohemian Rhapsody is hilarious.
In case you want to pick a favorite, here's the list from 2023. Flower Plower, Glacier Gobbler, Snobby-Wan Kenobi, for all those Star Wars fans out there, Fleetwood Mac, for all those music fans out there, Snohemian Rhapsody, Snow Monster, that one I met with, Edward Blizzard Hands, Polar Pathmaker, and the Snowler Express. Snow Place Like Home, if you're a Wizard of Oz fan, the Mayflower, if you're into history, and last but not least, the Fast and the Flurious. You might want to see if you can spot any of them on the highway next winter. You probably didn't get to see them this winter because we didn't have a lot of snow in Massachusetts this year. In fact, we haven't had a lot of snow the last few years. I asked how the changing climate is affecting the department's planning for and management of winter highway conditions.
You haven't seen the kind of winters that we typically get. And what you used to see is it would snow, and then you'd have snow on the ground throughout the entire winter, and you'd keep on getting added snow to it, right? I think with climate change, and it's really been this last 10 years that things have changed a lot, two things have happened. One, it doesn't stay as cold through the winter. That means that we have to deal with a lot more icing situations than snow. So our crews will go out, they'll put down salt almost every night now, whereas before, if it was everything stayed frozen all winter, you didn't have to go out as much, but it remelts during the day and then freezes at night. So we're out there a lot. It also means more potholes to deal with in the spring, by the way. But we plan for the worst. So we're always on the lookout for having a really big storm. And that does happen. 2 or 3 years ago now, we had a blizzard that hit, and that was a top 10 storm. It was a huge, huge storm. So it wasn't a bad winter as a whole, but you get these bigger, more intense storms in between a lot of rain now, is what we're seeing. So it's much different. It's harder to deal with in many respects. Our guys would rather see snow on the ground at any day of the week than have to deal with ice. Ice is a lot more difficult to deal with.
That was interesting to hear, because I assumed the highway department would have less work to do with less snow.
You said that more ice means more potholes. How do you deal with all those potholes?
We fix them as fast as we can. So when people call them in and we know that they're happening, if it's an area that's particularly busy with traffic, we'll go out and we'll put a temporary patch in and then come back that night, put down hot mix asphalt, which lasts a lot longer, permanent patch. There's a lot more than there used to be, because the way potholes form is water gets in underneath the pavement. Most pavement is actually not waterproof. It gets a certain amount of water can get into it. And then when you have a freeze-thaw action, that starts to break it up. And it breaks up a lot faster now than it used to.
So the water gets in, it freezes. When water freezes, it expands.
Yep.
And it makes more space for more water, and it just keeps going until it's a pothole.
Yep. It just gets worse and worse and worse, and then add traffic on top of it, and it starts breaking it up even faster. So when you have colder weather like we used to have more of throughout the winter, it would freeze once, and it would stay solid throughout the whole winter. We used to shut down construction, and we don't do that anymore. That's how much different the climate is now.
That was so interesting to hear how the changing climate is even changing construction schedules, and it's definitely changing how MassDOT manages the roads. I learned so much about roads, bridges, tunnels, and even trains during my visit to the Highway Operations Center. Learning new things is why I love doing this podcast.
It's a really good podcast. I've listened to your podcast.
Nice. Which one is your favorite?
Well, this one's probably going to be my favorite.
The next time you're on the highway, look for those salt sheds that are always prepared for bad weather. And look for the cameras along the side of the road that help people at the operations center monitor for safety. And keep looking out for new episodes of The Scoop. I want to give a special thank you to Monica Tibbetts-Nutt, Jonathan Gulliver, Marshall Hook, and the rest of the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. See you on the next episode of The Scoop!